Welcome to this episode of Climate Talk Uganda. My name is Josephine Karunji, and this is the acronym-free podcast about all things climate change. In our last episode, we spoke about agroforestry and its critical role in securing food systems. Today, we are shifting the gears a little to water. A couple of days ago, while the team behind this podcast thought through our next episode, William shared an experience he had in the field. William Sechiranda is the man behind the camera out in the field and in the studio. William, do you remember that story that you shared about the farmers you met that were burning bushes because they thought it would result in rain?
Yeah. I was given an opportunity to go to northern Uganda to take, I remember very well, it was climate change photos and getting some clips of how the climate has changed that side. But particularly I was heading to Adjumani, and we were in the car with the driver and some native of that place. But as we were driving along the way, I saw something that actually amazed me, and I was like, okay, so let me ask it. And that was people who are burning. You move like 2 to 3 kilometers, you see bush are being burnt. And I was so curious to ask, why do people burn so much this side? Then, well, I had some natives in the car, as I said. I asked them, then they said, the reason why they do burn so much this side, it's because the way this, when they burn the bushes, the smoke goes up in the clouds, and then they make rain, and then the rain comes on the earth. And I was like, okay. So I didn't know about that. I was so amazed to see that people, I don't know how true it is, but then I asked them how true it is. Then they said, yeah, it is true. Because when they burn, smoke goes up, then we receive rain. For me, what I knew, whether they are burning to get green pastures for their animals, or they don't want bush. And I was so amazed to hear that they are burning smoke to go up, and then rain comes. And yeah, so when I came back, I discussed about my fellow, and I was like, people, what happened to their side?
William, when you were growing up, you never had that story that if you burn things, then you get rain?
Literally, myself, I grew up in a village. Mm-hmm. I had a bit of it, but I wasn't so much. I did not find, I did not get a concrete answer that it is like this. But I heard about it. But generally, in our village, when we burn, we just need like grass, green grass for animals, but not for rain. But I heard about it. It wasn't so much. But when I got confirmation from that people, I was so curious to share with people that, is it true or what? Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, William.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So I asked on one of my social media pages if anyone remembered that story growing up. And the responses were interesting.
I'm Judith Kopsinge, a PhD student, and my main research area is on determining the effect of soil moisture conservation practices on soil water budgeting in Robusta Coffee in Uganda.
Were you listening to my conversation with William at the start?
Yeah.
I put this up on social media, and one of the responses I got was that while the burning bush example might be simplistic, these clouds actually form during forest fires. But somebody else responded and said, is this true or false? So is this true or is it false?
It's definitely false. Because rowing is formed in different ways. Because once you're burning bushes, you're actually contributing to what we call climate change. And that climate change might actually contribute to reduction in the rain that you're likely to receive in your area. And when it comes to rain, rain is formed through what we call the water cycle, where once the sun hits the ground, there is what we call water evaporating. And once the water evaporates, it rises up. And that water vapor, when it reaches in the sky, it condenses and then forms clouds. And then when those clouds hold so much water that more than they can hold, they release what we call rain. And that's where the rain comes from. So there's no way it can come from burning a bush. And when does it rain? It all depends on the seasons. We have seasons. And then these seasons are influenced by so many things. We have what we call the winds from the oceans, which influence the weather we receive in Uganda. And then we also have the location of Uganda itself. Given the fact that it's located near the equator, the movement of the sun around Uganda, around the equator. So it makes it Uganda to have two rainy seasons. Yes.
Has Uganda's water cycle been affected by climate change?
Yes, definitely. It has been affected because the temperatures have increased by 1.5 degrees. So that means the evaporation has increased. That's why we're experiencing some areas having floods. Because once the temperatures increase, that means the rate of evapotranspiration is increasing. So we are receiving more rains, or the rains are becoming erratic in some areas, while some areas, because of the too much sunshine, the areas are becoming dry. They're experiencing drought. Yes.
So this changing climate that you're speaking about, how is it affecting our agricultural productivity?
Yes, once the areas are receiving less rain, that means the yields are less. That means that their productivity is low, their potential. And then also once the rains are less, that means the quality of a product is poor. And then also once the rains are less, that means the area that a farmer could use becomes less, or the suitability areas are less.
You also spoke about the erratic rains, the heavy rains. Could you shed some light on how those then affect agricultural productivity?
So the erratic rainfall affects in that a farmer is supposed to plant. For example, the season is supposed to start in March. The rainy season, our first rainy season in Uganda, starts in March. But it actually starts later, maybe in May, when actually it's supposed to end. So imagine a farmer was planted in March. That means the changes in seasons, when they're expecting the rains, the rains are not there. And then also erratic can also mean that instead the rain comes in quantities that are so much than what we expect, which can also lead to over flooding. Also, too much soil moisture is not good for the plants. It can cause rotting or diseases.
Would you tell me a little bit about your research in soil moisture?
My first research looked at climate suitability. I looked at which areas of Uganda would be suitable for Robusta coffee growing in the future and currently. And it showed that currently we have most of the areas could be suitable, but in the future, much as the soil moisture is likely to increase by 10% in Uganda, but some areas, like for example the northern part, are likely to be unsuitable for coffee growing, which would require for them to adapt to the effects of climate change.
When you think about irrigation, I mean, since we're talking about water, irrigation, what role can it play in improving the productivity of farms? or farmers' lives in Uganda?
Yeah, of course, irrigation is likely to be one of the adaptive practices which farmers would have to take up, because we expect evapotranspiration to increase, the rains are going to reduce, becoming erratic. So the only other option would be for farmers to take up some of those adaptation practices, which irrigation is one of them. And once farmers irrigate, there are so many advantages they could benefit. For example, there could be increased productivity because they're irrigating, and then they could be able to produce crops throughout all seasons. And then also, they'll need to use irrigation for them to maintain the quality of their products, because some crops are very soil moisture sensitive. They have critical times when they need soil moisture. In case if the soil moisture is not provided, that means the crop will lose in terms of quality. For example, when it comes to coffee, when the coffee is at its expansion, it must have soil moisture. And then also, they'll benefit because all the land that is available, regardless of them, of the land being dry, regarded as dry, they're able to irrigate and produce. So increasing both productivity and production.
You seem to have a very soft spot for coffee. Is there a particular reason why?
Yeah, we know coffee is one of our main foreign earners for Uganda.
I see.
Yeah, and it's one way to get us from poverty.
Are you seeing, or are we seeing, the demand for irrigation for both crop and livestock farming increasing?
Yeah, definitely, because the climate is changing, and yet the population is increasing. So we need to move actually from our subsistence farming of not irrigating to what I can call commercial farming involving irrigation.
For the farmers that are already doing some kind of irrigation, what are the different types of technology that are being used in Uganda?
We have different types. For example, we have surface irrigation, where they release water and it flows by gravity onto the soil. And then we have what sprinkler, or what they call overhead irrigation. This method is far better than the surface irrigation, because for it, at least it's more efficient.
Isn't it also, this sprinkler system, doesn't it also waste a bit of water?
Yes. It wastes a lot of water, though it has a bigger coverage, but the evapotranspiration is more, is also high. And then we have the drip irrigation. For the drip irrigation, the soil moisture is brought onto the coffee root zone using emitters used through pipes. And the advantage with this is that there is less water wasted, because it's more of a controlled system, in that someone only releases the amount of water that a plant actually requires. You can also apply fertilizers through this system. Yes, the disadvantage with it is that it's very expensive to implement, and then it also requires some technological capacity for a farmer to use because of some maintenance.
Before you move on from that one, is it still going to be expensive if I'm using the president's method with my mineral water bottles?
Actually, it's the one I was going to. Actually, the bottle method, it is cheap. And you're recycling the waste from bottles. So you recycle, you get another use of the water bottles. So
you get them. The bottle method? What is it called?
Yeah, they call it the bottle method. But the disadvantage with it is that you can only use it when a plant is young. For example, when you planted a young plant, you can put it there and then it waters. When it comes to an old plant, it becomes labor intensive, which is hard to use over time. And then we also have the manual irrigation. which is mainly using the watering cans. And then we have what we call the center pivot irrigation method. This is a bigger of a sprinkler method, which is used on a large scale, where you have a rotating sprinkler system which is mounted and it's moved by electricity.
I was going to say, I haven't seen that. Do we have that in many places in Uganda?
Sugarcane, they use it in Jinja.
Okay.
And then, then we also have the solar powered irrigation. Yeah, so this one, of course, it is energy efficient because you don't need electricity, you don't need any fuel. Very environmentally friendly system.
Are there other practices that farmers can adopt to make better use of the water on their farms?
Yeah. The first practice actually is water harvesting. Water harvesting can come both in situ, where the farmer can dig trenches, in that when it rains, the water is harvested within their gardens and then it infiltrates slowly. Then they can also make small basins within their gardens, also help in harvesting water, where they dig and then they raise the soil so that once it goes inside, it cannot flow out.
Okay.
They call them harvesting basins, water harvesting basins in the gardens. They can also harvest from their houses and store that water, which they can use during the dry season. The other practice which they can adopt is agroforestry, the planting of trees within their gardens. Trees create a good microclimate, which is cool. They create a cool environment, so reducing on the evapotranspiration, therefore reducing on the water loss within the gardens. Then the other practice which they can adopt is growing drought-tolerant varieties. Then the other practice is using soil moisture conservation practices. For example, we have the mulch, we have the cover crop, we have the conservation tillage, where you reduce on tilling the soil to reduce on the amount of soil moisture lost from the soil. And then the other practice a farmer can use is irrigation scheduling. When it comes to irrigation, it's very important to schedule your irrigation in that you don't apply water more than what a plant would need, or more frequently, because if you think every 2 days I should apply water, when actually the plant does not need that water. Then the other practices would be terracing and contour plowing.
Judith, is there anything else that you'd like us to take home from a conversation on water and irrigation?
I think what would need is capacity building. Because much as we'd want to move towards irrigation, us, as researchers, as extension workers, do we know what to tell our farmers? So capacity building is what we need as Ugandans as we move towards irrigation.
Judith Kobusinje, who is currently a PhD student at Makerere University with a specialization in water and agriculture in Uganda. So I was reading an article on how climate change will affect global crop yields in the future. It's written by Hannah Ritchie, who is with the Our World in Data at Oxford University in England. She identifies water availability as one of the three key factors affecting crop yields in the future. Higher carbon dioxide levels and higher temperatures are the other two. And one of the fascinating things she concludes is that globally, with climate change, some yields will increase and some will decrease. To quote her directly, extreme events pose additional risks that could destabilize food systems in the future, which is very much in keeping with what we hear about rainfall in a Ugandan context. Extreme events, additional risks, and instability. But it's complicated. For me, this whole discussion around water and climate change And William's earlier story is a reminder that the information people have access to and where they get that information determines what they do in their day-to-day life. So if they know through their own experiences in life or through knowledge passed on from elders that burning bushes bring rain, that's what they are likely to do, unless a credible source, someone they trust, tells them otherwise. Thank you for listening in today. Remember, if you have any thoughts on this podcast, drop us a line at climatetalkpod@gmail.com. My name is Josephine Karunji, and this is Climate Talk Uganda. Thank you.